Good morning. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the state of Georgia and around the nation on Facebook Live right now at facebook.com/EW Erickson. The phone line's not open yet. We'll get to them in a minute. Forget impeachment right now. I think there's a bigger story, particularly for here in Georgia, the Sackerson-Singleton race. I realize it looks like a minor situation if you don't live in that area. If you live around the state of Georgia, it appears to be no big deal, but it's actually a pretty significant election. Last night in the Noonan and Peachtree City area south of Atlanta, if you're familiar with the area, the northern end of this district is Tyrone, Georgia. The southern end is Moreland. The western part is the edge of Noonan, where that Noonan bypass is, the Barnes & Noble, the theater and stuff. The eastern edge is Lake Peachtree. It's a small district for the House. David Stover was the state representative in this district. And Stover resigned. He got married, change in life issues, and had to resign his seat. So there was a special election. One of the people who ran for the race, there were four people who ran, one Democrat, three Republicans. And the Republican who ran, who everyone expected to win, is the daughter of the former congressman in the area, Lynn Westmoreland's daughter. In fact, she had on her campaign sign Westmoreland, so everyone knew it was her. She's actually very popular in the district. Her husband's a Superior Court judge. The family's well-liked, very popular. And she was out there, out front, significant margin in the primary. I saw several polls that were conducted by outside groups. She needed 50+1 to avoid a runoff. She was at 45%. And then something happened. Her disclosures were late. People were painted, why is she late on her disclosures? What's in her disclosures? Well, it turns out in her disclosures, David Ralston, the Speaker of the House in Georgia, gave her money. And she became radioactive. I started talking about it on radio myself, that she was clearly David Ralston's candidate. In fact, I'm told by a member of the state legislature that the House Republicans were all encouraged to rally behind her and shut out the other guy. There were three other people running. One was a Democrat, and they were hoping to capture anti-Trump zeal. The other was a lady, I forget her name, didn't really put on a strong race. And the other person was a combat veteran, had two Bronze Stars, was a helicopter pilot in Afghanistan in combat zones, named Philip Singleton. And I and a bunch of conservatives backed Philip Singleton when it became very clear Ralston was giving this woman money. And lobbyists were giving her money, and other politicians were giving her money. Singleton got one $500 contribution from a politician. I saw that there were tens of thousands of dollars raised for the Westmoreland candidate from lobbyists and politicians in Atlanta. The Speaker of the House had consultants tied into the GOP establishment in Georgia. And what started happening when the race began changing is some Republicans got together with the Democrats and tried to push the Democrat into the runoff, thinking all of the Republicans would rally to Westmoreland Sackerson once they got into the runoff, but keep Singleton out of the race. The conservatives were rallying to him. If you could unite all the Democrats in the district and some of the Republicans, you could get a Democrat and a Republican into the runoff, have a general election, ensure the Republican won. And it didn't work out. Not only did it not work out, but Singleton came in first, headed into the runoff. Once people got the message out that this is the Speaker's candidate, this is the Speaker's candidate, Westmoreland Sackerson went down in the poll. She was at 45% right before I think she got 20-some percent headed into the runoff, which wasn't good considering where she was in the polling. And by the way, I trust the polling. Small district, but had a good margin of error, had a good sample of people inside the district to show that she was in a very strong position. And she gets into the runoff, and it becomes just a slugfest. It becomes really, really nasty. And she has a ton of money outspending Singleton. She's portraying him as a rhino. She says he didn't vote for President Trump in 2016. And that's true. He didn't vote for Trump in 2016. He was in an active combat zone in Afghanistan and didn't vote for anybody. He didn't cast a ballot. He was too busy trying to avoid getting killed. That hurt her. That was a move of desperation. And then they got really nasty and started calling him a rhino. You couldn't trust him. He had run as an independent for Congress when Lynn Westmoreland left. He ran for Congress. Drew Ferguson became the congressman, but he ran against Ferguson as an independent. Said he wasn't a Republican. He wasn't a Democrat. He was for smaller government. Neither the Republicans nor the Democrats supported smaller government, so he wasn't either one. And he lost. And so they attacked him for that, that he wasn't a real Republican. He was a rhino. And he said, to the extent the Republicans abandoned their pledge for smaller government, yeah, he guessed he was. They keep promising smaller government. They keep refusing to deliver it. But then he kept pounding him. He didn't want to, by the way. He tried to avoid making this a case about the speaker. But ultimately, the speaker was pouring money in against him with his opponent. The speaker was encouraging others to pour money in against him. And so he made it about the speaker, and he said, you know, this woman is not going to stand up to the speaker. She's not going to stand up to him. She's not going to stand up to Atlanta politicians, and the speaker needs to go. The Republicans are going to lose in 2020 if the speaker stays. And he won with 58% of the vote last night. He won a campaign by running against the Speaker of the House in a Republican district. Now, in a Republican district in Georgia where the speaker – much of the state House Republican caucus and many lobbyists in Atlanta are pouring money in against him, he won. That should scare the mess out of Republicans statewide, that in a Republican district, by making it a referendum on the Speaker of the House, the Republican won. That should actually bother them tremendously, because that's a Republican district. The Democrats only need 16 seats in Georgia to get back the House of Representatives. They only need 16 seats. And there are a number of seats where Republicans barely won. Can you imagine what would happen if the Democrats started running ad campaigns with the victims of David Ralston's clients? The clients that David Ralston, for in some cases a decade, kept from ever having to go to trial for committing crimes or allegedly committing crimes. This is incredible. And it's going to blow up in the Republicans' face here in Georgia if they don't deal with the fact that the Speaker of the House is scandal-plagued. Even Republican voters don't like him. And a Republican defied him last night and won by making his race explicitly about David Ralston. If the Republicans aren't paying attention to this, they're going to have real problems. Now let me give you a side note here. Houston Gaines is probably the most embattled Republican in the State House of Representatives. Houston Gaines is a young state representative in the Athens area. And his district is one that the Democrats have seen population growth in. His district is one where Hillary Clinton did exceedingly well, and he was able to hang on. All of that money the Speaker of the House directed to this special election in Noonan could have been directed to help Houston Gaines, but it wasn't. Now, he's got a year, and perhaps that's the Speaker's calculation. He's got a year. But every dollar wasted in Noonan is a dollar not spent elsewhere. The Republicans are going to have comeuppance if they don't get rid of the speaker. Now, for those of you who don't know, I've talked about it several times here, but let me just give you a nutshell. The speaker is involved in a scandal where he was on the committee that changed a law that allowed the Speaker of the House, if he was a lawyer, to delay cases indefinitely. After he changed the law, he became the speaker and essentially monetized this. Criminal defendants could go to David Ralston, pay him $20,000 in one case at least, and their cases would never go to trial. Dragged them out forever. In one case, a pastor was accused of molesting a girl. The pastor was a traveling pastor staying at the girl's house one night, and while the parents slept, he molested the girl. The case dragged out for a decade. The girl had all sorts of health issues. She couldn't get closure on the case. And finally, almost a decade after the actions, they finally, because of all the outrage over it, they finally brought him to trial. He pled guilty for inappropriately touching her. He didn't go to jail. He was just sent back to Ohio, where he's from. He'll be free. It took a decade to get closure on that case, and there will be no jail time. It dragged out for so long. In another case, a victim came forward and said she was beat up pretty badly by her boyfriend. And he admitted he went to David Ralston, paid him $20,000, and knew the case would get dragged out, and was has laughed about the woman's memory getting worse over time. And this has happened repeatedly. It's happened in civil cases. It's happened in criminal cases. It's a joke in the courthouses in North Georgia. You talk to the lawyers and judges in North Georgia, they will tell you that it is just a well-known fact that if David Ralston is your lawyer, you'll probably never go to trial. Even clients, one time, you know, there was a client who wanted to go to trial, and Ralston kept dragging that case out, and he had to file a bar complaint against his own lawyer to get the case moving. And the Republicans are protecting him. The Republicans will not remove him as speaker. And Ralston, he got a bipartisan blue ribbon panel together, and they changed the law back. And all of these people who went on record, well, they saw their cases go forward, but how many others didn't? And are you really going to stand up to the Speaker of the House when he sets your budget? Maybe he's just a bad lawyer. Maybe he's just lazy. I don't know. Maybe it's not a scheme to monetize. But it certainly looked that way to a lot of people. And now Republican voters have had enough. And in the Noonan area, they've turned on David Ralston. And a candidate who, by all accounts, was well-liked, had high name ID, her father was a popular former congressman, she lost because David Ralston gave her money. If that's not a wake-up call to the Republicans in Georgia, I don't know what will be. I don't know. Will they pay attention to anything? Will self-preservation finally kick in with these Republicans? Because right now it seems they are way more scared of the speaker or way more deluded and oblivious to the fact that judgment day is coming for them. If they don't clean up their own house, the voters are going to clean up the house for them. If they don't take action, the voters are going to take action. And they need to recognize this. They need to understand that judgment is coming for them. And as long as they stand behind the Speaker of the House, what they're going to find is that Republican voters are more and more angry. Part of me wonders, will there be any other leaders to speak up about him? Will the governor get involved? Will the lieutenant governor get involved? You know, in 2020... we have redistricting. In 2020, there is redistricting. Now, whoever wins in 2020 will be in charge of redistricting. Are the Republicans willing to let the Democrats get a victory in the House and gain control of the House so they can lock in their House majority for a decade? That's what this is about. There are very real stakes in the Republicans backing the Speaker. Now, I have heard repeatedly from people the Speaker wasn't going to win it, wasn't going to run again. But after I said that on this very show a few weeks ago, the Speaker released a statement saying he's going to run again. If he's going to run again, that means he's going to want to be Speaker again. Are the Republicans going to back him? See, a lot of them thought they could put this aside and say, no, he's not really going to run again. We can wait. And I don't think they can. But now the Speaker's come out and said, oh, by God, I'm going to run again. Judgment day is coming for the Republicans. You should tell your state representative. If you got a Republican state representative, you need to tell him judgment day is coming for them. If they stand behind the speaker, you're not going to stand behind them. They need to know. You do not want the Democrats to gain control of the state house. They only need 16 seats, and most of those are in seats Donald Trump either lost or barely won in 2016. Judgment day is coming. If you don't believe me, look at House District 71. In House District 71, the lawyers, the lobbyists, the politicians, the speaker, they all poured money in. They outspent the other guy, and the other guy won.
Want to be on the show? Call Eric now at 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425.
Yes, you should. In fact, it'll be going out later today. If you want my recipe, text the word recipe to 33777. Phone lines are now open as well. We'll take your phone calls, 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. We do need to get into national news as well here in this hour, and we will circle back to Georgia news in the second hour. I got to tell you, I am... yeah, the news coverage, can we just acknowledge the news coverage as somewhat of an emotional roller coaster? The media wants us to be convinced this is a super serious matter, and they are certainly pushing Democrat talking points with the president's impeachment. The problem, though, is that they've been doing this for a long time, and this seems to almost be reporters crying wolf. And is there really a wolf this time, or is there something else? I want to put you run this montage by you. This is audio that stretches from 2017 all the way into 2019 of media coverage.
Breaking news.
A bombshell.
Today is a turning point. Today was historically bad for President Trump.
Today was a turning point.
A turning point.
We're at a turning point here.
The beginning of the end for the Trump presidency.
We have another bombshell.
Mike Pence might have to assume the office of the presidency.
Rumblings of the word impeachment.
Breaking news.
Another bombshell out of the White House.
I believe this is the beginning of the end.
I do too.
It's really the beginning of the end.
He may be feeling the walls closing in on him.
All the walls closing in on him.
The walls closing in on him.
Breaking news, a new bombshell.
One astrologer says this means the beginning of the end for President Donald Trump.
Trump will resign.
Trump is going to resign.
Is this the tipping point? I know we've said it over and over.
You think this is a tipping point?
And over and over.
This is a tipping point.
And over and over.
Breaking news, President Trump off the rails.
It was the beginning of the end today.
The beginning of the end.
Breaking news tonight, new bombshell.
This is the beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
The walls are closing in.
The walls closing in.
The walls closing in.
Breaking overnight bombshell.
This is a very dramatic day, and I think it might be near a tipping point. Do you think this is a tipping point?
December 1st, 2017, you can mark it down. This is the day that everything changed.
The beginning of the end?
Beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
The beginning of the
end. We begin tonight with a bombshell.
Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble.
Trump is in trouble.
The president will resign.
Another hour, another bombshell.
This is a tipping point.
Trump's going down.
This president could be impeached.
Resignation.
Resignation.
I don't think this president is going to serve out his term.
Mr. Trump will not serve out his term.
He will not serve out his term.
No way. No how.
Breaking news.
An absolute bomb.
Donald Trump is not. He's done. And it's over.
It's over.
The wall's closing in.
The wall's closing in.
This is going to be the Achilles heel.
Breaking news tonight. I expect Trump to depart.
This week will be the watershed week.
Trump is in big trouble.
Trump's in a lot of trouble.
It's a sign of a terrified old man who feels the
walls
closing in.
The walls
are increasingly
closing in on him.
Tonight, the walls
are closing in.
Today changed everything. This is the beginning of the end.
Today, the biggest
tipping point for the Trump administration.
What a historic day, the bombshells.
He's underwater. He feels
the walls closing in.
Turning point.
We may be at a tipping point.
It's the beginning of
the end.
The beginning
of the end.
Another bombshell.
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 This is a bombshell.
It is.
By the way, that stretched from the beginning of 2017 all the way into 2019. That montage, bombshell, 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 beginning of the end, beginning, turning point, tipping point, end, drop, orange man bad. You gotta hear this audio sometimes to keep your perspective on this because it sounds really bad. And I do think that because of the way the president has kind of ignored some of his advisors who have steered him out of trouble, he may very well have found himself in some trouble. But you do need this perspective every time you think that something bad is happening. Just remember that audio. Remember that the Democrats have been crying wolf about this stuff for a very long time. Since the beginning of his administration, they've been doing this. I'm totally going to play this again before the show is out today. I am totally going to play it again. Because there is troublesome news out there. Notice I'm actually downplaying it right now. Because I don't think it's helpful to come out every day like the news media is doing. Say, impeachment update. There's plenty of other news going on out there. There's plenty of other stuff. We got Mark Zuckerberg caught on audio talking about Elizabeth Warren and breaking up Facebook. We've got Spider-Man is back in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Eating red meat turns out not to be terrible for you. We're actually going to talk about eating red meat not being bad for you. New study, and the environmentalists out there are livid at the scientists. They want a retraction in the study, not because it's medically unsound, but because if people actually follow the advice, it'll be bad for the environment. I'm not making that up. There's a lot of other news out there. And, of course, the president and the border wall. And the president wants a moat filled with alligators. I know where he got that from. I want to talk to you about that when we come back. But before we get there, I want to spend a little bit on the rise of homeless camps around the country. You know, Rome's been dealing with this issue. Atlanta as well has been dealing with the issue. Savannah and Macon all dealing with homelessness and people parking on the streets and local communities not sure what to do with it and basically turning a blind eye to it and saying, I guess we'll just put it in a law that they can do it. Let's talk about that when we come back. So for those of you listening in South Georgia, Argentine black and white Tagus is being sighted in South Georgia on trail cams. They are giant lizards. Think Komodo dragons, but not quite as small. They get to be 4 feet long. They are not native. People keep them as pets, and they get to be giant, and they get released. Idiots. You know, this is the whole python issue down in South Florida. People were having pythons. They didn't know what to do with them. Instead of giving them to a zoo, they released them into the wild. And now you've got this massive ecological damage being done by the pythons that are not native to the Everglades, eating the alligators and the deer and everything else. Well, the Georgia Department of Natural Resources has been working since the beginning of the year to trap the tagus sighted in tombs and Tattnall counties in South Georgia. It's investigating reports in other parts of Georgia. People have been seeing them crossing dirt roads. They've shown up on trail cameras. According to a report last year, much of the South and northern Mexico contained suitable habitat. And Argentine black and white tiguses can grow. This is just horrific. They're not native. It's illegal to release them in the wild. They've got few predators, can multiply quickly. Females reproduce. They can reach 12 inches long, lay 35 eggs a year. They're not aggressive, but they'll defend themselves. They've got sharp teeth and claws and strong jaws. Birds and small animals and insects are targets. They eat fruit, vegetables, plants, pet food, eggs of chickens, ground nesting birds, other reptiles, including alligators and tortoises. My goodness gracious. The large lizard hasn't been spotted this far north yet, but DNR is asking the public to let it know if you happen to see one. Essentially, they're large black and white lizards, and they cannot be released in the wild, and you got to be careful. So just keep in mind. Just watch out. This is a random story. I realize it just crossed my desk. We got an Argentine lizard invasion because idiots who have them drop them off in the wild instead of taking them to an animal shelter when they're tired of them. I don't know why people do that with pets. Aggravating. Okay. Now, I want to talk about something that is not, it's political, but it's not Trump related. Can we do that? Can we talk about something other than the president? He lives rent-free in so many people's heads these days. I don't understand why we need to make everything about the president. By the way, you should know Gallup polling just came out. The Supreme Court, the most popular it's been in more than a decade. Interesting after the Kavanaugh situation. Well, I don't want to talk about the Supreme Court. I want to talk about homelessness. Listen to this from Fox News.
I think people have to understand just how serious the crisis is in California. I mean, murders and rapes in Los Angeles have gone up 16% and 31% over the last year. Fentanyl deaths are twice as high this year as they were at the same period last year. You have the residents of San Francisco, as you said, they're taking the law into their own hands, trying to deal with the crisis in pretty extreme ways. Mm-hmm. People can't walk on the streets. They can't push their baby strollers on the streets. The streets are covered with feces. They're covered with infected needles. People shoot drugs in the street. We're dealing with a complete breakdown of social norms here. There needs to be a state of emergency to deal with the housing shortage, to deal with the drug epidemic, and to deal with the mental health crisis.
We actually have
psychiatric beds available. We have the resources available. The government is absolutely failing to take action.
This is Los Angeles, not San Francisco. We've heard a lot about San Francisco, not Los Angeles here. They're increasingly turning a blind eye to homelessness, and it's a growing issue in progressive enclaves around the country that homelessness is not a problem if you don't treat it as a problem. In Austin, Texas, the mayor of Austin, Texas, is asking the police to stop carrying guns and tasers and instead carry 4-foot-long rope. Why should the police be carrying rope in Austin, Texas? Because the homeless are allowed to set up camp outside of a 4-foot distance from someone's private property. And as long as the outer edge of the homeless encampment is 4 feet from the private property, they're not breaking the law. And the mayor wants the police to do that. Y'all, this is crazy. Let me tell you what's going on here. You genuinely cannot understand this, or frankly, you can't understand the horrific story in the New York Times of child abuse and the child pornography epidemic that's happening online and spreading around the world. You can't understand any of this without understanding the collapse in the Western civilization of Western Judeo-Christian society. You can't. And now, I know. I'm playing with fire here by doing this because it drives secularists insane when you say this, but it's true. It is absolutely true.
True that.
True. Siri. Wow. All right, Siri. Let me break this down for you. You really, if you're wondering why this happened, why in the last few years has there suddenly been this push in highly secular enclaves that are deeply antagonistic to religion to allow homelessness to fester in a way that harms private property, harms the homeless people, and treats them as if they're not a problem or a nuisance or everything's just fine with them. And it has everything to do with secularism becoming its own religion, with its own doctrines and dogmas, with its own sacraments, with its own liturgy, with its own ecclesiology. Here's what's going on. In actual real faith, you are told to take care of the widows, the orphans, the poor, the refugees. That's Christianity in a nutshell. That's Amos. That's the book of Amos. Take care of the widows, the refugees, the poor, take care of the homeless. Take care of them. What we're seeing is a grand perversion in secular society of this to, if we don't define it as a problem, it's not a problem. But more than that, a reckless misunderstanding of individuality and that somehow these are all individual decisions. We see this with transgenderism as well, that it's an individual decision and who are we to judge? It's a twisting of historic faith into something that it never has been as well, that it's a perversion of individuality. It is an idea by the secularists that if we decide that this is not a problem, it's not a problem, and we can turn a blind eye to it. And it's this idea that in the secular religion, we live our best life now, very Joel Osteen. And when the homeless person decides to camp on the street, they're living their best life. But there's also something more to it than that, and it ties in all of these terrible stories. You know, in Macon, where I am, we've been dealing with this as well. Local businesses are saying that, and in Rome, you've had the situation where local businesses are saying, we got to deal with the homeless population. We got to do something. The local tattoo artist, interestingly enough, in the article in Macon on the 13 WMAZ website, the local tattoo artist says, let me actually read the quote for you. Because it's better if I read you his exact words. There's a local homeless man who's been threatening local business owners. He slashed tires for one of the local business owners. And then there's the redemption tattoo artist who says of this homeless man, he cleans up, he sweeps the sidewalks, he picks up cigarette butts. He's never asked me for anything. As far as I know, he's the best bum around Macon. And we have a lot of bums. That's what this guy actually said. That's an actual quote from a tattoo artist in Macon, Georgia. So we've been trained as a secular society. We're not allowed to look and see that people have a screwed up life. We're not allowed to see that people have problems. We're not allowed to look on neurological, sociological disorders and say that they're disorders. Everything's got to be defined as normal in secular religion. The only deviant thing in secular religion is true religion. I think it was Gertrude Himmelfarb who noted that deviancy is defined downward, that the two-parent nuclear household is defined as deviant, where deviant is propped up as somehow normal, we're to look at normalcy and look at it as bad. We're to look at the people going to church on Sunday as somehow deviant. And we're to look at the homeless guy who slashes people's tires when they ask him to move as somehow just another expression of normal in some case. And that's what we're seeing in secular society around the country. It is a way for them to not have to deal with the problem. Because they need their taxes to go to paying for kids' transition surgeries to transgenderism. They need your tax dollars to pay for anti-bullying programs and schools of privilege. They need your tax dollars to pay for their latest environmental wackery. But they can't use your tax dollars to fix the homeless problem. And oh my gosh, we can get rid of the babies, but we can't get rid of the homeless people. It is an absolute perversion of true religion. We're not taking care of the homeless man. We're not helping him out of his destitute state. You know, with a lot of people in secular religion, that they like to quote Jesus and they say, well, Jesus says we're always going to have the poor. Yeah, but he didn't mean the exact same poor person. We're always going to have a class of poor people. We're not going to have the exact same poor person. And yet with the left, they think, let's just keep the poor. And when we see this with Elizabeth Warren, for example, in her class warfare, this goes back to the old Margaret Thatcher thing in her House of Commons. They want the rich. They're okay with the poor being poor as long as the rich are poorer. Elizabeth Warren, she's okay with a poor person as long as we make the poor person comfortable. She wants to make the rich person uncomfortable and the poor person comfortable. She wants to punish the poor person if they ever try for success. Secular religion punishes success. You have great individuality in the secular religion. They have made, in more ways than conservatives who believe in individual responsibility, the left has embraced this idea of individual right. Everything you want to do is a right. The government needs to provide you everything so you can live your best life now. And that's not the way our society was ordered, but that's also not the way compassion is ordered. It is not compassionate to see the bum pick up cigarette butts and say, oh, he's the best bum of all the bums. He's the best bum. We need to leave him alone. No, why do you want to leave a man alone who's sleeping on the street? Why do you want to leave a man alone who's ranting to himself in the middle of the night, sleeping on a grate? Why do you want to leave the woman alone who's on the street with her children sleeping in a cardboard box? Why do you want to say that's okay? You're disrespecting the private property owners who pay the taxes, and you're disrespecting the homeless person by telling them they're okay when they have a real problem. But you can't do that in this society. We define deviancy down. Bishop Chaput, Philadelphia, says evil preaches tolerance until it's dominant, then it seeks to silence good. That's what's happening here. We have perverted right and wrong. We perverted good and bad. The left throws scripture in so many conservatives' faces, conservatives get turned off. I mean, you know, there are a lot of conservative pastors who don't want to teach the book of Amos because it's the book the social justice warriors use. But you know what Amos says? True religion is taking care of other people in the name of God. And the left's not taking care of other people. The left is just defining it as not a problem, so they don't have to take care of other people. And this, by the way, this is where I think conservatives should step up and where churches in particular should step up. We have for so long abdicated responsibility to the government to take care of these problems. A lot of churches don't even have social welfare programs anymore. They send their kids off to Mexico to work on their tan to do a mission trip as opposed to looking in their own backyard. Seek the welfare of the city in which you live, not to go through this again, but Jeremiah 29:7, seek the welfare of the city in which you live and there you'll find your welfare. You're not going to find your welfare on the beach in Mexico where you're hammering a few nails and working on your tan. You're going to be helping the people in your local community with the homeless population. You got these big cities in San Francisco and Los Angeles where they criminalize trying to help these people. They make it hard for nonprofits to help them. And it is because they don't want to have to acknowledge the problem. And it is increasingly because they don't really think there is a problem. It is increasingly because they think this is just a normal part of life. And they can turn a blind eye to it. It is not compassionate. It's illiberalism. It's not liberalism. That doesn't mean you round these people up and throw them in jail. It does mean you as a society need to figure out a way to help them. No one wants to live on the street. You know, no one really wants to prostitute themselves. You've got this idea on the left now that we should legalize prostitution. It's a choice. It's women's empowerment. Nobody wants to prostitute themselves. But this is what's happening here is as these as vices and social ills grow in the secular religion, they're defined as normal. The sinner is the person who looks on this and says this is bad because you're casting a judgment. Well, you're supposed to. You know, the scripture actually does say to judge, to use discernment, to judge what's right and wrong. The same Jesus who said, judge not lest ye be judged, is the Jesus who said, use your judgment. And the left doesn't want to use their judgment, and they don't want you to use your judgment. And when you point this out, when you point out the emperor has no clothes, you're the bad person. We're seeing this rise in secular progressive communities because they can't acknowledge that they failed. And in their inability to acknowledge that they failed, they've decided to define the failure as normal and the successful as failure. It is a rewriting of the norms of society to prevent having to acknowledge that progressivism is failing in society. You know, I was on a city council for a long time in Macon, and Macon at the time was the only partisan city council. Every other city council in Georgia, including Rome, Athens, Atlanta, Clarksville, Dalton, Jasper, Vidalia, Valdosta, Savannah, Columbus, Americus, you name it, they're all nonpartisan. Macon had a partisan city council. And I can't tell you what the partisan position is on trash collection. I can certainly tell you the conservative position is to privatize it. Let an outside company do it. They can do a better job more efficiently. I can't tell you what the partisan position on homelessness is. What I can tell you is that it's not right to look at the homeless person and say, oh, that's just a good bum who cleans up. No, that's a homeless man who could use a warm meal and some shelter instead of a cardboard box. But you got to turn a blind eye to that and fix all your other social outrage. That is a failure of progressivism and a reminder that the secular religion will fail the people it claims to want to help.
National Connections, Local Focus. Eric Erickson is live every weekday.
It is Eric Erickson here. The phone lines are open, 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. Have you heard about this audio of Mark Zuckerberg? The millennials at Facebook, much like the millennials at a lot of these tech companies, are going to be the undoing of these companies. So Facebook has been known in the past to have these town halls where they have meetings off the record with employees. And Google's been doing the same thing for a while. Well, at Google and Facebook, the younger employees have started bringing in cell phones and surreptitiously recording the town halls and then leaking them to the press to complain and stir up stuff within the company. I cannot believe that people want to bite the hand that feeds them. You know, just as an aside, when I was at CNN and when I was at Fox, but particularly at CNN, if you had a problem with other contributors or other contributors had a problem with you, you knew not to air grievances publicly. In fact, one time someone leaked to Media Matters, and very insulting stuff about me and about, my friend Dana Lash. We were both CNN contributors at the time, and management came down like a pile of boulders on everybody for doing that. Went to Fox and it wasn't really the same. There was a lot of infighting at Fox, but they did a very good job, even with that infighting, of not really letting it air out publicly. As over time, that's gotten worse. More and more you hear the squabbling behind the scenes at Fox. But it's not the sign of a healthy organization when people are fighting in the press with each other at an organization. And we're seeing that at companies like Facebook and Google, where employees are now trying to undermine the company because they disagree with the company, and so they themselves think that they are somehow in charge of the company and can set company direction. A lot of people who don't know their place, a lot of people whose parents gave them participation trophies and got these kids to thinking they're somehow in charge. So Zuckerberg is caught on this tape saying Elizabeth Warren would be bad for the company, and he will fight anyone who wants to break up his company. I got to tell you, I wouldn't have very much respect for the guy if he was willing to roll over. I mean, the government is coming for him. And you need to understand, why is the government coming for Facebook? It has nothing to do with your privacy. The government doesn't care about your privacy. For God's sakes, the government wants Apple to build a backdoor into your cell phone so they can see your text messages. The government doesn't care about your privacy. The government is upset with Facebook because Donald Trump won. In 2012, Barack Obama did exactly what Donald Trump did in 2016, and the media wrote glowing stories about how effectively they used Facebook data to turn out the vote for Barack Obama. And in 2016, Donald Trump outdid them, and suddenly Facebook is bad because Donald Trump is bad, and they're out to get him. They're out to break up Facebook. Why are you breaking up Facebook? Listen, you don't have to use Facebook. You know, if you turned off Facebook tomorrow, you could still log in to websites. You could still use the internet. Facebook, I think, is actually different from Google. Google, you know, we've got a bunch of partisan Google activists out there who have been on the record, willing to go on the record, and say how they want to use the algorithm to shape the election. You've got Google employees who argue that if you don't have various minority groups involved in shaping the algorithm, you're going to leave them out. But at the same time, they're perfectly willing and able to leave out conservatives. That, I think, is a problem. Facebook, you don't have to use. Google has a near monopoly in advertising online and in search online. Sure, you can use DuckDuckGo, but barely anybody does. Its searches aren't as compelling, but that's a problem. Facebook, though, it's not a big issue. It's just Donald Trump won. That's why they hate it.